Hey, it's your friend Mel, and welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast. Have you ever read something and thought, how do they know exactly what I'm feeling right now? Writing so powerful, you just keep coming back to it again and again. Maybe it's in a book that you keep by your bedside, or a quote that you saved online, or a poem that articulates exactly what you're feeling but couldn't quite say. Today, you're going to meet a number one New York Times best-selling writer whose work and words have helped millions of people, including me, be happier, heal, and live a more peaceful and fulfilling life. Now, I've been following this author for years online and sharing his poems and passages with people in my life because his writing captures the joy and struggle, heartbreak, and the search for purpose and peace in a way that's just truly moving. He writes under the pen name Young Pueblo, but today you're going to meet the man behind the books and poems that have inspired millions, Diego Perez. Just listening to Diego will make you exhale. So whether you're healing from hurt or setting boundaries or rebuilding trust or learning to love without losing yourself, or you just want to feel a little better, this episode is for you. It's filled with timeless wisdom to help you let go, find stillness, and hear the answers that have always been inside of you. It is your permission to slow down and reconnect with yourself. A reset for your mind and soul. One that will remind you you're not behind. You're already on your way. Hey, it's your friend Mel, and welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast. You know, it's always such an honor to be together and to get to spend time with you, but I'm really glad you're here, and I'm glad you made time to listen to this particular episode, because here's what it tells me. You're the kind of person who wants more out of your life. So do I. And if you're a new listener, or you're listening right now because somebody shared this episode with you, I just wanted to personally welcome you to the Mel Robbins Podcast family. Today, you're going to hear timeless wisdom that will help you feel more purpose and peace in today's chaotic world from number one New York Times bestselling author and acclaimed poet, Diego Perez. Now, Diego writes his bestselling books under the pen name Young Pueblo, and he's sold over 1.5 million copies that have been translated into more than 25 languages. Every day, millions of people turn to him online when they need clarity, truth, and a simple reset. And in the last decade, he has spent over 13,000 hours in silent meditation, which is probably why his writing is so profound. So please help me welcome the extraordinary Diego Perez to the Mel Robbins Podcast. Diego, welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast.
Thank you so much, Mel. It's an honor to be here.
You know, I've never met somebody in real life that has a pen name.
Yeah.
And so I feel almost like I'm doing something wrong by calling you Diego.
Now, Diego is the right name. That's the name my mother gave me. But Young Pueblo is a pen name that helps me just stay focused and really understand that humanity as a whole is growing.
Mm. What does that mean, humanity as a whole is growing?
When I started meditating, I started realizing that I was really immature, but I've also really enjoyed studying history. And then I thought, I'm like, wait, humanity is also very immature. Like, we don't know how to do the basic things. We don't know how to clean up after ourselves, how to share, how to be kind to one another, how to stop hitting each other. The basic things that we try to teach people who are, you know, children in kindergarten, we haven't mastered these fundamentals.
Interesting. Wow. It's so true.
Totally, totally. The things that we try to teach four-year-olds, humanity as a whole, is still learning these basics.
Oh, I'm so excited to get into this. Does having a pen name help you drop into your deeper thoughts?
Totally. Having a pen name just helps me be really honest. It helps me be in touch with what's true and what's difficult about my own story and just have the freedom to really go deeply into suffering, the suffering that we all experience.
Wow. Well, what I'd love to have you do is I'd love to have you speak directly to the person who is with us right now. They're somewhere in the world and they've found and made the time to be here with you and me and learn from you and learn something about themselves. Could you share with them what they might experience about their life that could be different if they take everything you're about to teach us today to heart?
If you're going to come hang out with us today, I think the main things that you're going to get are inner peace, a new sense of gratitude, and new clarity around how to best show up in your relationship.
Okay. We're going to accomplish that in this conversation.
I think we should try.
You know, Diego, you say that you don't need to hit rock bottom to become the best version of yourself. Mm. What do you mean by that?
I think a lot of times we think about transformation in a much more dramatic context where we have the idea of rock bottom and we think that we need to actually hit it to become the best version of ourselves. But I've seen it done a lot of ways. I went through my own rock bottom, but I've also seen my wife and different friends change their lives for the better without necessarily hitting a rock bottom. It more so is a moment of awareness when they realize, oh, I could do things a little bit better. I can create a much more peaceful atmosphere in my own mind and have that show up in my life.
What's interesting is, do you think that the rock bottom moment for you is what also made you go, I don't think I want to let it get that bad. I want to start noticing sooner.
Oh, totally. It was either change or die, honestly. I mean, for me, it got really bad. I, you know, hit a rock bottom that was driven by my inability to feel my own emotions. Like, I was so afraid of my emotions that I would chase after drugs and alcohol and get myself to a point where, you know, my body was breaking.
Would you read us the poem that you've written about this?
I was never addicted to one thing. I was addicted to filling a void within myself with things other than my own love.
What does that mean?
It means that when you don't have self-love, you end up finding these superficial things to run away from yourself. And I didn't know how to deal with my own pain, the pain of growing up in poverty, the pain of, you know, seeing my parents fight to figure out how to pay the rent, to put food in the fridge. Seeing this constant struggle filled me with so much anxiety, so much sadness, but I had no real way to process it. So what ended up happening was I just developed a lot of bad habits to run away from myself.
One of the reasons why I love your story so much, and I didn't know a lot of your backstory. I had just followed you online for years, but I was excited to talk to you because there are so many people around the world that listen to this show who are in their 20s or have people in their 20s and their families that they're really worried about, and it makes it so relatable. So can you kind of put us at the scene of when this breakdown started to happen?
Yeah, so it was from when I was 20 years old to about 23. It was
okay, the rock so you're bottom in moment. College.
I'm in college. I'm sort of just, you know, lost in this space of trying to run away from myself as fast as possible. So what I would notice was that whenever I would feel these intense emotions, when I would feel sadness, when I would feel anxiety, what I would do was I would roll up another joint, drink, go out to parties, stay around people, make sure that I was never alone, just trying to avoid myself as much as possible. And really, it just felt like whenever the tension was too big inside of me, I had to run. I had to run because I was scared of what was inside.
Well, what's interesting about the word run is that if you haven't stopped to think about this for yourself, or if you're listening or watching right now, and there's somebody in your life that is either struggling or they're not thriving in their life.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're not quite sure how to reach them. You don't stop and think about what the experience is like, because there is so much friction and tension in your life when you're not thriving. I mean, nobody's an idiot. You know when you're not doing well. But when you use the word run, what you're basically saying is, in those moments, here you are in college. You wake up, you feel a sense of tension. You can't handle that feeling, so you reach for the joint.
Yeah.
You're alone.
Exactly.
You start to feel self-conscious or lonely. You can't handle that feeling, so you reach for the drink. You don't like being on your own, because then you get lost in your thoughts. So you are constantly reaching for friendships or toxic relationships. Or for a lot of people, it's like social media. It's this constant need to fill something.
Yeah. And it's some form of distraction, right? You're trying to just busy your mind with something external so that you don't have to face the reality within. And it becomes really challenging because you can fall into that level of survival mode where it becomes dangerous. It just becomes dangerous to your livelihood. And I could feel over that period between 19, 20 to 23, I could feel my body falling apart. It was just getting weaker and weaker and weaker until it was that rock bottom moment where I was on the floor crying. I could feel my heart breaking. I talked to a doctor a week after, explained to them what happened. They said it sounded like a mild heart attack. And I could feel how my body was completely out of rhythm. And if I kept going in this direction, I was going to die.
Was there something that happened? Like, you know, because you hear a story like this and you're like, you know, what was going on?
It was like a slow car crash. And it just got to the point where my body couldn't handle all the drugs. You know, it wasn't just like marijuana and alcohol. It was like different pills, cocaine, like really whatever I can get my hands on. And putting all of that into your body at once, your body's going to say stop.
Well, what's interesting about it is that people, when you hear a story like this, focus on the alcohol or you focus on the drug.
Yeah.
But where you started was that there were all of these experiences that you had growing up.
Yeah.
Whether it was being an immigrant or having a family that was dealing with poverty or watching your parents fight, or I would imagine also struggling with a sense of belonging in all white communities, like just lots of this stacked up that never gets processed.
Yeah. I think it would have been a very different situation if this was happening now versus in, you know, 2010, 2011, because it was just a very different culture. Like there was no self-love movement back then. There was no, you know, I didn't know anybody who meditated. I also didn't know anybody who was seeing a therapist. So there are these tools that are so widely available now and much more part of the culture. It wasn't like that back then. So for my whole time growing up, you know, I got to this country when I was 4 years old. I just had no way to process my emotions, especially the difficult ones.
So if the person that's listening is really resonating with this, whether it's with the reaching for something, whether it's alcohol or weed or distraction or the phone or toxic relationships, you're like constantly reaching for something.
Yeah.
Or they're dealing with this emotional pain. You know, you're starting as you listen and you watch, you're going, God, that I've had a lot of that stuff happen. I've never talked about it. I haven't gone to therapy. I've never wanted to look at that thing. What's the very first thing you want the person who's watching or listening to do right now to start healing?
I think you really want to start realizing that you can crave distraction because you're afraid to feel your emotions. And when I was very much committed to running away from myself, the medicine was giving myself my own attention. That's why in that poem that I just read, it was, I really wasn't addicted to anything. Like once I really started slowing down and paying attention to my emotions and giving myself that very active form of self-love, where I'm just accepting my own emotional history, the alcohol didn't have hold over me. The cocaine didn't have hold over me. It was just, I was trying to fill this void that was really deeply seeking my own attention.
That's so interesting. Yeah. You know, 'cause people say you're afraid to feel your emotions. I think most of us just don't want to deal with them.
No.
You know, it's easier to smoke the joint and, you know, eat the gummy or have the beer than it is to pause and just feel boredom or frustration or sadness or loneliness. I mean, I know I'm certainly guilty of that, but this is why you say healing starts with self-awareness, not distraction. But we live in this world that's moving faster than ever. And facing your emotions, I think it kind of feels impossible because there's so many distractions and because there's so many emotions that people are feeling right now. What do you just say to somebody who feels that way?
I mean, we live in such a fast-paced world that it really does feel like a form of rebellion to slow down. But the reason that you want to slow down is you have to recognize that it's an investment in your own inner peace. I think I distinctly remember the moment where I finally slowed down the first time where instead of rolling a joint, I sat on my bed and I could feel the anxiety coming up. And instead of rolling a joint, I just challenged myself. I said, sit on the bed, just feel what's coming up. Even if it's scary, even if it's boring, even if you want to be distracted, just sit there for 5-10 minutes and just feel what's happening. And this is before I learned how to meditate or anything like that. I just knew.
What gave you that idea to do that?
Oh, it was clear. I was like, if I'm going to live, I need to do the opposite of what was taking me towards death. So if I'm running away from my emotion, I have to feel it. I have to feel these emotions. If I'm lying to myself, I need to start telling myself the truth. And if I'm like, you know, gathering all these habits that are just making me sicker, I need to do the opposite and start feeding myself strength.
What was the lie you were telling yourself?
The lie was really simple. It was that everything's fine, that I'm okay, that I'm going to be totally fine. And I was just avoiding that truth that actually, I don't feel that good. I'm not okay. And I have to pay attention to myself. I want to read you this passage about healing. The biggest factor in your healing is not time. It is your ability to face emotions that you used to run away from. Bringing your attention inward with presence, breathing into the emotions, and not attaching yourself to what's arising will help the heaviness evaporate. There is freedom in the subtle act of feeling your truth without clinging to it.
What does that mean to you?
It means subtlety. And I think that's one of the difficult things about this quick time period that we're in, where everything is moving so fast, is that it's so easy to sway from extreme to extreme. But what we don't realize is that you can honor the truth of your emotions without letting them control you. You can feel the sadness without jumping into actions that you will later regret. You can feel the anger without just letting the narrative swim in your mind and create some fake stress that doesn't really need to exist. So having that reclamation of your power to just feel the emotion, be with it without letting it take control of your actions, I mean, that's the beginning of a different life.
I love the word subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It is so powerful because you've talked about how even the word suffering doesn't have to imply some rock bottom moment. That suffering is when you go through life with so much friction and frustration and stress over the little things that stress becomes your state of life.
Exactly.
And what's amazing and hopeful about what you're saying is if we can just focus on the subtleties of managing your response to your emotions in the moment, that opens up a whole new door to a different life, right?
Right. When you open yourself up to subtlety, you start seeing that peace is in the gray area. It's not in the black and white. It's not always yes or no. Sometimes it's just to observe. Just feel what's happening in you without just letting your mind run into different narratives that can create a new level of stress for yourself.
You know, you described this moment where you were sitting on that bed and you said to yourself, just sit here for five minutes.
Yeah.
Don't roll the joint.
Yeah. Do the boring thing.
Just do the opposite of what you always do, which is reach for something else and just observe.
Right. No distraction. Just feel. And it really helped me see that my emotions in my mind felt like, you know how like when you're a child and you start sleeping in your own room and you're like really scared of the dark and you're looking in the corner and it feels like some ghoul is there?
Or for me, the clown under the bed.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I just imagined that there was something under the bed.
That's how, that was my relationship to my emotions. They were so frightening that they were like a nightmare in my mind. But then when I actually said, it's time to face it, just feel it, it didn't feel good. But it was okay. It was much better than I thought. It was way less scary than what I had sort of cooked up in my mind.
So what about the person who's so used to chaos? This was me, by the way. Mm. So this is a question for myself. That it feels like stability. Like I'm so used to darting to the grocery store and then making the phone call and then being on my phone and then running to that store and then picking up this thing and then getting on that Zoom call and and then running the kids and then feeding the dog, that is what feels like stability, right? Or is that a lie I'm telling myself?
I think one thing you have to ask yourself is, are you disconnected from the present moment? Are you really present with your loved ones? Can you really enjoy a conversation with a dear friend? I think if you're missing out on all of that because you're thinking about what you need to do next, then you really have to train yourself to reconnect with the present moment because you're really missing out on the most joyful parts of life. So you can still get a lot done, but don't miss what's right in front of you.
So if you had asked me that a couple of years ago, the answer would have been, no, I'm not present. No, I am not connected. No, I am not cultivating any sense of peace because I am powering through everything I need to do. And I'm stressed at every moment. And I feel pressure to get it all done. And I feel worried about everything around me. And you're saying that if you focus not on the bigness of it all, but on the subtlety of what's available to you at any moment, that is how you begin to create peace?
Absolutely. This is the universal truth that the greatest joy that you will find is going to be in the present moment. The greatest wisdom that you will find, it's going to be in the present moment. Your happiness, you're going to find it in the present moment. You're not going to find it in your past memories. You're not going to find it in what you're craving about in the future. But joy, peace, happiness, these things arise in the present moment. So if you're totally disconnected from the present moment, you're not letting yourself get the juiciest parts of life.
There's a poem that you wrote about this. Can you share it with us?
Sure. When chaos is all around you, the wisest choice is to create peace within you. Inner peace is not always a pristine calmness. Sometimes it is accepting the tension inside of you without reacting to it, literally feeling it without reinforcing it, and then moving gently through your day.
What does that mean? Can you give us a couple examples of how you can really create that peace within you in the middle of a modern chaotic world?
I think one of the most beautiful moments of self-awareness that you can have is when you realize that a little bit of tension is moving through me today. I feel some anger. I feel some sadness. I'm still mad about the conversation that I had yesterday with my boss. But you're honoring that truth while still intentionally moving forward through the day with gentleness. You're being kinder to yourself. You're being aware of the words that you're giving to other people, and you're not compounding it. You're not making it worse. You're not letting that tension just snowball into like something much bigger than it really needs to be. Really, it just needs its space to evaporate. And I think when you have that level of awareness, a hard day can become a lot easier.
You know, I don't know if you're aware of it as you're listening to Diego or watching us right now, but I guarantee you, if you just come into this moment, check your shoulders. Because I bet, like, I just noticed as you were talking, you said the word tension. I'm like, oh, I'm my shoulders are basically so hiked up, they could be earrings on my earlobes right now. And so I just like took a deep breath and dropped my shoulders because I think it creeps into your life in ways you don't realize it, whether it's gripping the steering wheel too tight or being frustrated that somebody's talking too loud in a cafe or annoyed that somebody scheduled a Zoom meeting at 4:30 and you were hoping to sneak out at 4. Like all those moments are invitations to do what you're going to teach us to do, which is to, instead of buying into the chaos, take a beat and create a little bit of peace within yourself, like protect yourself from that chaos.
Yeah, and that peace can start in the body. I love that you're pointing that back to, you know, are your shoulders up? Are you tense? Because when you intentionally bring that awareness to the body and relax, it gives the mind a bit of peace.
Is there a particular like mindset shift that changed the trajectory of your life? Because you went from sitting on a bed and not rolling a joint. Mm-hmm. As that moment where things changed, you had this insight of, I'm not okay. I'm going to stop lying to myself. Right. I'm not okay. And since I don't know exactly what to do, I'm just going to do the opposite of what I've been doing. Mm. And is there another mindset shift? Because those are all small shifts in the way that you look at the world and yourself. But is there another one that changed the trajectory of your life?
Absolutely. The biggest one, and the one that I'm probably going to be learning throughout the rest of my life, is embracing change and how I need to work with the universe instead of against it. When I go away and meditate in these long 45-day silent retreats.
Wait, hold on. You go on 45-day silent retreats?
Yes. I've done 45 days twice, 30 days three times.
What is that like? Does your mind go silent? Are you constantly talking to yourself?
The mind gets pretty powerful. Yeah, I mean, it's loud in the beginning, and after some time, it does calm down significantly, and it becomes like a really powerful microscope. And we don't quite realize that we have a sample of the entirety of the universe in our body. And when we turn that attention inward and we start noticing, like, what is this universe composed of? The main thing that pops out is change. This universe is composed of change. And when we look at this universe, whether you're looking at the cosmological level, at the conventional level that you and I exist on, the atomic level, everything is flowing and changing and moving forward. So if you fight that, it's going to hurt. And if you embrace change, you're going to be able to flow and move with life. So to me, it's like one of the most fundamental things that I've learned in my life is that if I'm struggling, I'm probably not embracing change.
Ooh, wow. So it sounds like the transformation started with that one decision. I'm going to sit here.
Mm-hmm.
Then you made another. I'm not going to lie to myself. I'm not okay.
Right.
I don't want to feel like this. And after you put the joint down, you then said you started focusing not on the past or how you felt in the moment, but what are the things I could start to do that are the opposite? I could take better care of myself. I could stop the drugs. I could start exercising, just kind of building better habits.
Right.
And this is all before you became a meditation master. This is just like you're a college guy trying to pull yourself together. But how did the writing begin? Like, I got a lot of popcorn popping upstairs, so maybe I should write some of this down. Is that kind of what started happening?
Yeah, and then my intuition started roaring. My intuition was like, look, you are not perfectly healed, you are not perfectly wise, but you are taking steps forward, and it's worthwhile to openly reflect. And that's when...
Now, had you ever journaled before?
No, never journaled, but I just started feeling all of these quotes and sentences and reflections pop up in my mind. And it started also with little essays, and I was really just processing. I was like, the reflections were me trying to understand, like, what is attachment? Like, what is love? How can I be a much kinder version of myself? And then I thought to myself, well, let me see if this makes sense to other people. So I started putting them into black and white images, sharing them online with little essays underneath. And I saw that people were also in the midst of building their self-love.
Just listening to you, I already feel more peaceful. And I also feel like it's a great moment for us to hit the pause button and take a quick break and allow our amazing sponsors to share a few words. And I also want to give you a chance to share this timeless wisdom with people in your life who deserve to be happier and to heal and to find more peace in this chaotic world. Don't go anywhere, because more of this wisdom will be waiting for you after a short break. So stay with me. Welcome back. It's your friend Mal. Today, you and I are experiencing timeless wisdom from number one New York Times bestselling author, Diego Perez. You write a lot about online, how the foundation of any really solid relationship is the relationship you have with yourself. Why is that?
I mean, if you are disconnected from yourself, you're going to have a really hard time connecting with another person. And I noticed that as soon as I started meditating, I was faced with that truth of, wow, my relationships were so superficial because I was so far away from myself. So as soon as I started telling myself the truth, just living in this new honesty, I saw that I was able to show up in all of my relationships, not just with my wife, but with my parents, with a new level of honesty to have a better sense of presence with them.
You know, when I hear you talk about this, I think a lot about high school and college and law school. And I don't have a lot of really close friends from those years of my life. Mm. And I can look back and now say, it's because, like you, I had a lot of pain and a lot of emotion that I didn't know how to process. And the thing that kept me distracted was constantly being in a new relationship, constantly needing to be dating somebody, constantly needing to be with the person that I was dating.
Right.
And it makes so much sense that if you're disconnected from yourself, which I was, you can't build strong relationships, which is why I didn't.
No. And the person is always going to feel a little far away. And you won't quite realize that that distance is measured equally to the distance that you are far away from yourself.
There's a poem of yours that I read about this that I just loved. Could you share it with us right now?
You cannot build a deep connection with someone who is disconnected from themselves.
How do you know if you're in a relationship with someone else who's disconnected from themselves?
I think the primary way is if they really struggle with vulnerability. I think that's how you know. If you can be honest with yourself, if you have that strength, then you can potentially, in a safe space, show that honest version of yourself, that vulnerable version of yourself. But if they really struggle to open up and just share their highs and lows with you, then there is a bit of disconnection there.
What's the number one lie about relationships that people believe?
It's a total lie that relationships are supposed to be easy. You have to learn how to love each other well while the relationship shines a mirror on the ways you each need to grow. This is a big challenge to accept.
Let's talk about that.
I think these romantic comedies have totally spoiled the culture and they're very enjoyable. But when that's all you're fed, when all you see over and over and over again is people coming together only after they have had one challenge and then it ends happily ever after, that slowly makes you think that love is going to solve everything. But the reality of love is that that is only the beginning. That just shows that there's a very strong connection there, that I can feel very strongly for you. So I say, yes, I love this person, but do I know how to care for them? That's something wholly different. Learning how to care for someone means trying to really understand your emotional history, understanding your triggers, learning the ways that you like your happiness to be supported. That takes time. That doesn't just happen overnight.
I think it's a very big fad right now to hear people say, oh, well, we broke up because they have a lot of healing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, I'm on my healing journey, which is, of course, what we're talking about, but there's something performative about it when people say it a certain way. But do you think it is true that you got to find somebody who's healed, or you got to find somebody that you can heal appropriately with, or how do you think about that? Because we're all on a spectrum of our own journey to become a better version of ourselves, to deal with our emotions, to understand our past, to become who we're meant to be. So we're constantly colliding with other people who are not whole and never going to be, because we're always going to be changing. So how do you think about this?
This really comes back to our theme of subtlety and understanding the balance between, like, you're never going to be perfect for a relationship. So waiting to be perfectly healed, you could be waiting your whole lifetime. A lot of healing can happen while you're learning how to develop a harmonious relationship. So I write often, you know, you don't need to wait for things to fall into this perfect place. If you find a deep connection, what matters is that, do they have the willingness to grow? Because if I'm in a relationship, very quickly that mirror is going to be in front of me and I'm going to see what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. So am I willing to grow into a better version of myself so that I can best support your happiness?
When I think about this topic, I believe all relationships are part of your healing process. Even the really bad ones. Because they teach you something.
Right.
Even the ones that break you apart, and I think we've all been in those, they teach you how to repair yourself. They teach you what the baseline is that you won't go back to.
Mm-hmm.
They teach you boundaries. They teach you self-respect. And so when I started to think about, if you look backwards and you assess everybody you've been with, they have all been a part of you growing in to the person that you're becoming. And when I look at it that way, I have a lot less judgment of myself, especially when I was the really toxic one in the relationship, that it was all part of the process that we all go through, that we are colliding with people all the time, and they do serve a purpose, whether it seems so or not.
Yeah, I love hearing that too, because that humility, like that's what helps you grow. It's like you're not always going to get it right. And especially when you're with someone during one of the darker periods of your life, like, of course, I'm sure you did plenty of things wrong. We all have. And understanding who we were is not going to dictate who we will be, because we have that power to open up new chapters like we've been talking about. But it's just critical to understand that you need to throw away perfection, throw away this idea of perfection, but let it combine itself with this understanding that even though you don't have to be perfect, you can still grow. There are still qualities that you can develop. There are still things that you can improve on.
What's the biggest red flag in relationships?
If they are constantly overestimating their capacity and saying they will do certain things, but end up not showing up, this is a sign that they struggle to face their own truth.
What does that mean to you?
I think it just, you know, you have to really have a good relationship with honesty. Just be able to say what you can do and what I can't do. I think that's one of the key things about relationships, is both people understanding that I am the creator of my own happiness, right? I can't make my wife happy. I can do my best to add joy to her life. I can do my best to support her happiness. But ultimately, happiness is a mindset that you need to cultivate within yourself. And once you do cultivate that, you have a much clearer sense of like, what are my boundaries? You know, how much can I actually do in one day? How can I support your joy? And without that, you know, you get a bit lost.
Well, and if you have somebody who's lying to you,
yeah,
you don't know where you stand.
Totally.
So let's talk about the green flags. What are the biggest green flags in a relationship?
The three biggest green flags are growth, kindness, and compassion. If they are consistently kind, if they care about growing, and if they can see beyond their own perspective, then this is someone worth your time and energy. Mm. Yeah, I think these three elements, kindness, growth, compassion, like what we've been talking about, growth is essential. If you're going into a relationship, you're going to have to embrace the fact that you need to cultivate new qualities. The aspect of kindness is critical, because you don't want to forget to be sweet to your partner. You want to keep that gentleness there. But then the other critical aspect is a very specific type of compassion, where you are stepping outside of your own perspective to witness the perspective of another person. That is the essential rule that helps resolve arguments. If the both of you can see each other, which means stepping outside of your own perspective, then you can have solutions.
You have a beautiful poem that's all about the signs of a good and healthy relationship.
Mm.
Can you share it with us?
Yeah. Attributes of a good relationship: calm communication, hold space for each other, honesty, no need to perform. Trust is strong. No need to control. Rest, laugh, and adventure together. The love between you is empowering. Commitments to each other are clear. Both have the space to heal and grow. Flexible. No need to always be together.
Why do you think we keep repeating the same patterns in love, even when we know these patterns are hurting us or people that we care about?
Because for most of us, craving and attachment are the default. So that makes us very, you know, inflexible. And it keeps us back in the survival mode. It keeps us in our old patterns. And to literally break away from the past, like, that takes energy and it takes repetition. That's what we don't understand about the mind, is that all of these habits come from repetition, even the good ones.
So you said you've built a home with another person a few times. That resonated with me. But what does it actually mean to you?
I want to unpack this more by reading something I wrote to you, Mel. I have built a home with another person a few times now, always expecting it to be a lasting haven. As the storms came and went, the homes would show their weakness and eventually come apart. Being left with the dread of sadness and the hollow feeling of unwanted new beginnings, it has finally dawned on me that if I build a home within myself, a palace of peace created with my own awareness and love, this can be the refuge I have always been seeking.
How do you know if you are guilty of constantly trying to find a home within someone else? What does that feel like? How do you start to identify, oh my gosh, I'm seeking this from somebody else?
It's very clear. It's if you're constantly trying to externalize your happiness, if you think that your happiness is solely coming from the TV show you're watching, from the person that you're with, if your happiness feels fully dependent on another person, then there's a lot of disconnection there and you're not taking ownership over your own happiness.
So does that mean if you're somebody that's obsessed with finding a significant other or obsessed with getting married or like you just feel like until that thing happens, there's something wrong with you? Like how do you like start to really see that, wait a minute, all I want is to build a home with somebody else, which is a beautiful thing to do.
Totally, totally. Those are fine goals to have, but you have to understand that once you get those goals, they will be ever more fruitful if you already have a home within yourself. If you have a sense of joy when you're alone, if you're able to walk without being distracted all of the time. I think these things, you know, the relationship, the marriage, it becomes more fruitful when you have spent time cultivating a mindset of happiness on your own.
Well, this one really resonated with me because especially in my teens and 20s, before I met my husband and started doing a lot of work to face the things that I didn't like about myself so that I could feel comfortable in my own skin and feel at home with myself, I 1000% used the next relationship as a way to feel secure. The next relationship as the thing I poured my energy into. The next relationship as the home I was going to nest in.
Right.
To the utter destruction of strong friendships, my health, my studies in school, all of it. And so I can see it for myself. I wonder if there's other examples of where you and either people that follow you and write to you or in some of the work that you do with individuals or in researching this latest book, examples of kind of signs that you may be guilty of doing that too.
If you can't slow down and you can't befriend the present moment and you're almost too goal-oriented where you have to accomplish the next thing after another, whether that's, you know, getting the partnership or chasing the next bonus or chasing the next sort of external validation, then something's missing internally.
Yeah. And I think what I would add to that is that when I look backwards, I see that every one of these relationships kind of had an arc. Hot and heavy, the chase, the attraction, all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, once the newness was over, the discomfort, the frustration, the friction inside of me, the agitation, the restlessness started to rise up. And I would immediately go, oh, well, this is a sign that this person is not my person. And then I would end it and reach for the next one. Because the chase and the attraction and being in something new in and of itself became its own distraction.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I really enjoy writing about is that there are so many aspects of relationships that are just mundane, especially when you start going into something that isn't as new and is much more of a long-term relationship. Like what you're going to spend time doing is like cutting vegetables together, sitting on the couch, like solving a bunch of logistical problems. And there is sweetness in that simplicity that we overlook because we're constantly chasing highs. But the reality is that a lot of a really healthy relationship will be boring at times. And we have to teach ourselves, like if we want a long-term relationship, you have to teach yourself to appreciate the highs and the lows.
You know, you actually write about this. You've written that a lot of relationships don't start off harmoniously.
No.
What can be a normal, rough beginning versus a sign that something's off?
Let me read you one of the most popular things I've ever written and posted online. Some relationships do not have harmonious beginnings. There is an undeniable pull that brings the two together, but there is also a distance between them created by their unhealed hearts. The space within them, filled with the unknown and unseen, causes miscommunication between the two, friction, and sometimes even unintentional pain. How can they treat each other well when they are still mysteries to themselves? The shift comes when both commit to turning inward to heal and know themselves. Naturally, this brings them closer together and elevates the love and support they share. Yeah, when you come into a relationship, you have to realize that there's probably still a bunch of healing to do. And especially when you get in front of a really good partner that you want to build something with long term, it's going to show you that there are deeper triggers, deeper trauma that you probably haven't even dealt with yet. So oftentimes, to be able to make the relationship successful, you do have to go into your own healing journey as you move with the relationship. And that's one thing that became really clear to my wife and I, was that the two of us choose to be together, but we're not one entity, right? We're almost like two flowing rivers that have chosen to exist side by side each other. And we both saw that the first part of our relationship, it was chaotic. It was a constant blame game. We were constantly pointing fingers at each other. And a lot of that was because we just had a bunch of unresolved stuff. And as we started building that self-awareness, slowly harmony started coming into our relationship.
You know, I think about it almost like there's you, there's your partner, and then there's a third person in the relationship, and that's the marriage or the relationship. And that is, each of you are working on becoming who you want to become. You also need to be working on that intersection of who you are together. I say to my kids that it's so easy to get caught up in the shiny stuff.
Yeah.
And to chase all the things that modern life becomes obsessed with: the looks, the money, the likes, the this, the title, the that. But at the end of the day, 80% of it is, does this person feel like home base? You know, like when you come home at the end of the day and walk through the door, is there friction and tension, or do your shoulders drop and you feel a sense of peace?
I mean, that's how you know. That's why, like I always talk about, you know, there's three guides inside you. There's your intuition that's pointing you forward like a compass. It's taking you to the best version of your life. There's your nervous system, which is helping you know, like, who are the right people for you? What are the right tasks for you to engage in? And then there are your values, right? Like, does this align with how I want to show up in my life? These are three guides that can lead you to the best life possible.
How do you know which guide to listen to?
Different moments, right? So like your intuition is like a slow, calm ebb. It's like a wave that is slowly hitting the shore. And it's really consistent. I mean, my intuition was telling me to move to New York City months and months before I was ready. It was literally asking me to step outside of my comfort zone to open up a new chapter. And it did the same thing with writing. It was like, write, you know, you're not healed. You know, you're not fully wise. You know, you have a ways to go, but reflect, share it openly. And it took me a while to listen. Your nervous system is there, so you know when you're around the right people because your shoulders can relax. You can put your guard down. And your values, you know, like kindness, compassion, honesty, whatever your values that really show up that mean a lot to you, you can check in and see, like, are my actions aligning with my values?
Thank you for sharing that. I want to hit the pause button so we can give our sponsors a chance to share a few words. And I also want to give you a chance to share this conversation with people that you care about. We all deserve to feel more peaceful. And today's conversation is the reset that your mind and soul needs. So don't go anywhere. I'll be waiting for you after a short break. Thank you. Welcome back. It's your buddy Mel Robbins. Today, you and I are spending time feeling more peaceful and inspired with number one New York Times bestselling author, Diego Perez. So we've been talking a lot about finding more inner peace. And over the break, I was thinking about what I wanted to ask you next. And this is the question I have that I'd love to unpack. Why is it so hard for people to set boundaries and hold them?
I want to read you this passage. Having boundaries will help your growth flourish. If you don't like someone, you don't have to be around them. You can wish them the best in your mind and go along your own way. I think boundaries are tricky, right? Because they're very useful, but you want to make sure that these boundaries don't become walls. Because if you're building boundaries in a way where you're trying to avoid problem solving, then you're building walls. But if you're trying to build boundaries that just help you feel a little more nourished and help you have space in your life so that you can breathe and you're not avoiding problem solving, then you're doing it right. But you have to measure it because the boundary that you're going to have 1 year may not necessarily be what you're going to need like 2 years from there.
How do you describe boundaries? Like, how do you think about them? I love the fact that it's not a wall, but do you have a way that you describe what a boundary is in relation to you versus another person?
Yeah, I think it's simple. It's like just what you're willing to accept and not accept. I think if, you know, you're not going to accept maltreatment. I think if there is like, if someone's trying to speak to you in a way that's disrespectful, if they're trying to just take from you and take constantly, and they're not giving anything, then there may be a person that you do want to help, but you can only help them so much. So you kind of have to just draw the line in the sand somewhere.
But I think a lot of people accept a lot of mistreatment and a lot of disrespect. And so what is somebody actually struggling with if they are not able to draw a line in the sand when they know they're in a situation where they're being disrespected or mistreated?
That person is in dire need of more self-love, because self-love means embracing your power and it means saying no to people-pleasing. I think people-pleasing is like just a giant thing that's happening globally, and it's not the same as compassion.
Let's talk about people-pleasing, because I think about the inability to say no,
yeah,
or the fear of disappointing somebody as the same discomfort that not having a drink, not having a joint, putting down the phone, yeah, sitting with yourself, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The reason why we please other people and we can't say no and we put up with treatment that is disrespectful is because we can't handle the emotions that we think we're going to feel if we stand up to somebody, if we disappoint somebody. Like, I think that's what's at the heart of it.
Totally. And I would add to that too, is that we forget that we're hunter-gatherers. We forget that we used to exist in tribes. So I think part of the mode of people-pleasing is that we don't want to be kicked out of the herd, right? There's a fear of solitude there. Like, what if you're all alone and your friends don't want to be friends with you anymore, or your partner doesn't want to be with you anymore? So part of us like leans into people-pleasing because we just want to be part of the group.
Mm-hmm. We want to get along. But you're here to say that's what's creating chaos in your life.
Totally. That there's a balance. There's that subtlety, that theme of subtlety keeps coming up, where you can be in service of others while simultaneously being in service of yourself.
How do you know when you found your people?
I think it's just this beautiful moment where it is easy for you to laugh together. It's easy for you to feel seen. And you feel like you can bring forward your vulnerability and think about things together without being heavily judged.
Would you share that passage that you wrote about this?
Sure. If you are wondering who your people are, they are the ones who make your heart feel seen and your nervous system feel calm. Yes, it's that simple.
It is that simple, isn't it?
It is. I think there are so many things that we overcomplicate. But I think there are times where, like, does this person just feel good to be around?
You know, with everything that you've learned and shared, I mean, 13,000 hours of meditation, millions and millions of people that follow you online and read your work. What does it really take to build a good life, in your opinion?
I think there's two key elements, and we've talked about both, but when you combine them together, it really helps you flow through life in a way where it becomes smoother to achieve your goals. And I think that's embracing growth and embracing change. I think when you really embrace change, you can't accrue tension, the stress that we were talking about, the anxiety, where you may feel that stress and anxiety pop up from time to time, but then you remember that you control what you can control, and what you can't control, you let it go, you let it flow. And when you accept the fact that there are habits that you can build that can make your life easier, what you need to do is figure out which ones you want to put energy into and then repeat them. Through repetition, they become second nature.
Yeah, when you keep talking about fighting change, I can't help but think about this visual of being at an ocean.
Yeah.
And standing in the water.
Yeah.
And trying to punch the waves as they come,
literally,
as if they're going to somehow disappear.
Yeah.
It seems so absurd to fight against the tide and the waves of change. Yet we do it. When the alternative is to climb up on a raft and just ride the waves as they come.
That's the exact image I see in my mind too. It's like, if this universe is a river that's always flowing forward, then attachment is me trying to stand there against the current. I'm going to get knocked down. Like literally, and I'm talking about the old school of attachment, right? Attachment in the sense of craving for things to exist in a very particular way. You're just not going to beat the universe. The universe is just going to keep flowing forward and you'll eventually get knocked down. So let go where you can let go. Let me read you something that when I posted it, so many people resonated with. How do you build a good life? Relentlessly follow your intuition. Build with people who also love to grow. Take responsibility for your healing. Love yourself so deeply that you feel at home in your own body and mind. Teach yourself to forgive. Never stop being a kind person.
So beautiful. I get a lot of questions about how to know when it's your intuition versus your fear.
Yeah. So the
I would imagine 13,000 hours of meditation. You think about a lot of these little things, right?
Yeah, totally. It's a lot of the sounds the mind makes, a lot of the thoughts that pop up in the head are just the echoes of reaction or even the echoes of past pain. So intuition is not very mental. It's very bodily, right? It's coming more so from your core and it's pointing you in a particular direction. And, you know, my intuition, like my craving is telling me, oh, I would love to have some ice cream tonight. That's not my intuition. My intuition is more so focused on bigger things. And I've noticed over time that it's more so focused on trying to open up your next chapter as opposed to the day-to-day situation.
I kind of have a similar way that I distinguish between fear and intuition. Intuition, like you said, for me is always centered kind of either here in the stomach or the heart.
Yeah.
Fear is full body or it's loud.
Yeah,
it's chatter. It's this, that. And the other thing is I notice that fear always brings tension and friction and makes me feel depleted and small.
Yeah.
And intuition, even if it makes me nervous, feels expansive.
Yes. I was literally going to say that word. It's trying to help you expand.
Yeah. And there's an energy to it. Even if you're nervous about it, there is something about the expansive nature of, well, what if, or imagine a world where, or just head over there. So I agree with you. It feels more directional rather than specific, whereas fear is like loud and super specific. What are the three healthiest habits that everyone listening or watching should learn in order to improve their lives?
The three healthiest habits to learn. Number one, being grateful for the little things. Two, noticing when your nervous system is overwhelmed and responding by saying no to anything new that would consume your energy. And number three, don't hide your love. Let your friends and family know how much you care about them.
I love these three habits. Because number one, they're subtle. Mm. But the impact they have is profound. And so as you hear those three right now, or you're watching right now, I want you to really think about how simple this would be.
Yeah.
And what a big impact it would be. Number one, being grateful for the little things. And let's do this right now. This is how simple this is.
Yeah.
What is something little that you're grateful for?
Oh my gosh. I think I'm always really grateful for natural spring water. Whenever I can really have some natural water, I think it just tastes so good and is so nourishing. And honestly, the first thing that came to mind is I'm so grateful for my Toyota RAV4. It is so freaking reliable and it just never breaks. It always does its job. And in my mind, I have a hard time giving it up because it just works too well.
And as you're listening to us, I want you to think of something specific, small. Second habit, notice when your nervous system is overwhelmed and respond by saying no to anything new that would consume your energy. And this is also one of those subtle things. Whether it's being overwhelmed at work and somebody asking you if you can cover their shift, and you as a people pleaser would normally be like, okay, even though you don't want to.
Yeah.
Learning to take a beat and notice that you're overwhelmed and saying no, that is a subtle but powerful moment where you create peace for yourself instead of creating chaos in order to please somebody else.
Right. Part of reclaiming your power so that you can have real inner peace is having a good understanding of what your capacity is.
I think another example of this is just invitations that you feel obligated. Mm. Whether it's going to a fundraiser or helping somebody do something, there are times when you do that because it fills you up.
Right.
But if you're in a place where things are really chaotic and you're overwhelmed and your nervous system is fried, learning how to pause and say no is a habit that creates peace for you just in the saying of the no.
Yeah. And sometimes the invitations aren't just physical. Sometimes the invitations are emotional.
Give me one.
Someone is trying to invite you into their anger, they just got home from work, they're super irritated by what happened, and you can feel that in their irritation, they want you to join them. But for the sake of your own peace, you can find that subtle place where you can, sure, listen to whatever their gripe is, whatever happened, but choose to live in your peace as opposed to joining them in their tension.
Oh, another good one's gossip.
Mm,
like when people are joining you in that emotionally destructive practice of trashing someone else in order to make themselves feel good or to bond with you. Mm-hmm. I love how you can just let them have that thing that they're doing, their emotions,
right,
their habit, but you can protect yourself from joining in.
Right. And especially if it's someone that you love, you can see them in their moment without becoming them, without just doing exactly what they're doing. Mm. I think that's one of my personal big goals for this year is to just live in my peace as opposed to joining other people's tension.
One of my big things this year, honestly, is saying no. Like just focusing, coming out of launching the Let Them Theory book and just ending the leg of the tour in 2025.
Right.
The natural thing to do would be to do the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for me, noticing that I'm already overwhelmed and tired and I don't want to do more.
Right.
So saying no to anything that is more this year.
Yeah.
That's a great way for me to create peace in my life. And as you're listening or watching this, I want you to think about what are some things you could say no to? Who are the people that emotionally always drain you?
Right.
And how can you let them have their space and their suffering or their tension or their anger, but not join in with it? Protect yourself. What a great habit.
I think it's really important. And you have to realize too that your best work, the next great thing that you will do in your life will not come from a place of exhaustion. It's going to come from a place of this reservoir of rest, reservoir of calm. And when you can just let yourself breathe, the mind can connect in new ways where you can, you know, produce something of great service.
Well, and I think we all have had the experience where if you've been lucky enough to have a break from work or to go away on vacation or take a staycation and not actually do something.
Yeah.
Near the end of those moments away, people tend to make big life changes when they're walking on a beach or they're out in the woods or they're away from the chaos because you have a sense of peace where you can see things more clearly.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about today is how to create that peace in small moments every right. day so that you can see things more clearly. You don't have to escape your life or go on a fancy vacation
right.
in order to create that space and that calmness to really get clarity about what you want to do next or what changes you want to make or who you want to become.
Right. Just a simple moment of silence, going on a short little walk, all these things that you can do for yourself that are quiet moments, literally pouring yourself some tea, like having these moments of presence can make you come in contact with your truth and then gain that energy to make a change.
And the final habit, don't hide your love. This is so beautiful. Let your friends and family know how much you care about them.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite lessons that I've learned from studying change through meditation, literally studying change within the framework of the body, is that we have this really combative relationship with change, right? We fight change. We hate change sometimes because we deeply crave for all the things that we like to always stay the same. But then we forget that change is what's allowing everything to exist. Like if the universe were static, you and I would not be having this conversation. So change is allowing all these beautiful opportunities to appear in front of us. So to me, when I think about change and I'm spending time with my parents or spending time with my partner, these are beautiful moments that are right in front of me that I should spend time in these moments, not just thinking about something else. So arriving into these moments with a greater sense of presence really helps me enjoy them at a new level.
You know, you say we have a combative relationship with change. I think we have a combative relationship with love because we spend most of our time with the people that we care about most, either taking our emotions out on them or wishing they would be different or being frustrated by who they are. And one thing that has changed my life for the better, obviously, learning people to let people be who they are and who they're not. But in that space of acceptance, really being proactive about expressing love, because we all sit back and we're like, why are they not in the hat? And we expect it from other people.
Yeah.
And then we think we're giving a ton of love by trying to change people and tell people what to do and buy them things, hoping they'll do other things for us.
Right.
Versus just expressing how much we care about somebody, what we're proud of in terms of what we see them doing, and being the person that goes first in that. Because I've found the more that I express the things that I really admire or I'm proud of or I need from somebody else, it comes back tenfold. It starts with you.
Totally.
How do you radiate peace? And how does that create more peace in your life and relationships?
The people with the best vibe are the ones who radiate peace. They intentionally heal their generational trauma, and they are not interested in harming anyone. The energy in the room changes when they enter because they treat people with compassion. I think people can just feel you, right? If you are tense, if your mind is full of friction, if there are so many parts of you that remain unprocessed and unhealed, you can feel that tension in someone next to you. But when you are radiating that piece of someone who knows what they're working on, who is actually taking steps forward, then people are going to feel calmer around you because you know that you're moving forward with a mindset of compassion as opposed to a mindset of ego.
What I think we've gotten wrong about power is that people think it's the loudest person, the richest person. It's actually the most peaceful person that is the most powerful person in the room.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a peaceful mind is a powerful mind. When someone really has access to their own peace, their creativity soars. They're able to increase their capacity and they're able to connect much more deeply.
You tell people to face the storm and evolve from it. Mm. What does that actually look like in real life? And how do you do that?
I want to read you this passage. They asked her, "How do you get through tough moments?" She answered, "Do not trust the way you see yourself when your mind is turbulent, and remember that even pain is temporary. Honor your boundaries, treat yourself gently, let go of perfection, and feel your emotions without letting them control you. You have enough experiences to face the storm and evolve from it."
I love the Do not trust the way you see yourself when your mind is turbulent. And remember that even pain is temporary.
Oh, yeah. When you're going through a down moment, that is not the time to do self-analysis. If your emotions are turbulent, if your sort of view is cloudy and gray, that's the time for you to treat yourself gently, for you to not be judgmental about yourself or other people. And it even helps to like let the people around you know that you're going through a tough day and just move forward with a sense of kindness towards yourself and others.
So Diego, if you had to give someone a prompt, So if the person listening is either at a moment where they're recognizing they really want to step out of the chaos and create more inner peace in their life, or they're going to share this with somebody in their life that they really hope can embrace what you're teaching us today. Is there a journal prompt that you could use today, right now, that you could share with the person listening or watching?
I think one of the best journal prompts that you can work on is a combination of two things. One is, what are the patterns of the past that were holding me back? And two is, what am I doing differently now that is making my life better? Because we don't give ourselves enough credit, because oftentimes we're so judgmental and we don't realize that already we've taken steps forward into a better life.
So is, what are the patterns of the past kind of like, what do I keep doing that I want to stop doing? Or what do I keep doing that is hurting me now?
Right. Like what have I been doing in the past that has been making life difficult?
Gotcha.
Right.
And so you would have written down in your 20s, I do too much drugs, I'm in a lot of pain, I keep telling myself I'm okay and I'm not.
Very attached, inflexible, avoiding my emotions, and trying to seek external validation.
Gotcha. And then what was the second one?
The second one is, what steps forward have I already taken? Because we don't give ourselves enough credit. Because oftentimes, even when we want to move in a better direction, like we've already started drifting in that better direction. And it sometimes is unconscious. And I think we're way, way, way too hard on ourselves. And we need to realize, like, these tiny little steps that I'm taking, they matter.
And acknowledging them matters.
Yeah, they need to be celebrated.
These are great prompts too, because as we've already talked about, every single day, there are constant moments that creep in where you're causing suffering because you're getting stressed out about things, you're frustrated about things, you're trying to control things behind your control, which is always something that you can journal about and recognize and notice.
Yeah.
And recognizing it helps you become more masterful at just letting it go when it comes.
Yeah. And being honest, pen to paper, that can really help build your self-awareness. And self-awareness is the essential foundation of personal transformation.
Why?
Because if I can't see myself, I can't change.
And you can't see yourself unless you're observing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What are your parting words?
I'm just wishing so much joy and peace to whoever's listening, especially if you're going through a really difficult moment. I've been there. You've been there. We've all been there. But just understand that there's so much more in the next chapter for you. So keep pushing forward. One tiny step will really make a difference.
Well, I'll tell you what made a difference is having you here today in our Boston studios. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all the work that you do, for the books that you write, for being here, for being you. I'm so grateful that you came, and I cannot wait to see the difference that this conversation makes in people's lives all over the world.
It's a huge honor to be here with you. Thank you for being a source of inspiration in my life and for just showing the power of service.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I also want to thank you. And I want to acknowledge you. I think it's really cool that you took the time to listen to something that's not only going to help you create a better life, but will help you create more peace in the life that you already have right now. And there's no doubt in my mind that if you apply the things that Diego shared with you today, you will feel that peace. You probably already feel peaceful now. And the fact that you chose to listen to this, in my mind, is evidence that you're capable of doing what needs to be done to become the person that you really envision yourself being. And just know that your friend Mel, I love you. In case no one else tells you that, I wanted to tell you I love you and I believe in you, and I will be here cheering you on every step of the way. All righty. I will be waiting to welcome you in the very next episode. I'll see you there.
gonna roll with it, everybody. Oh, did you change?
Yeah, got ready
for very like zen jacket.
Okay, you know, of course, here comes a frog in the throat right when we're about to start.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. That's brilliant.
Tracy, any notes?
No, that's great.
You're doing dynamite, by the way.
Yeah, this is fire. This is really fun.
Cameron, you killed it, woman. My shoulders are basically so hiked up, they could be earrings on my earlobes right now. I could see people using that as their wedding vows. That really resonated. Jeez.
I think I'm okay. I'm like fully caffeinated.
It's garbage day.
I'm so grateful for my Toyota RAV4. It is so freaking reliable.
Boom. We got it. Great job. Well done.
Wow. Amazing.
Oh, and one more thing. And no, this is not a blooper. This is the legal language. You know, what the lawyers write and what I need to read to you. This podcast is presented solely for educational and entertainment purposes. I'm just your friend. I am not a licensed therapist, and this podcast is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a physician, professional coach, psychotherapist, or other qualified professional. Got it? Good. I'll see you in the next episode.
SiriusXM Podcasts.